Jeff Davis. You're tuned in to WPVM's Wordplay on a fine Sunday afternoon. Joining me in the studio today is Asheville poet Sam Adams. On the boards today, we have the remarkable Veronica Gunner. Thank you so much. So, Sam, how did you come to writing? How did you come to poetry? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Let me think. I think I had a great uncle who likes to read a lot, and he made it seem just really cool, you know? And his advice about reading was take it easy, enjoy it. Stuff that was really honest, you know. Mm-hmm. I just really liked how, and he was really compassionate too, and it seemed like his reading made him more compassionate. So mm-hmm. I think that was what really stirred me mm-hmm. about reading, and then I just wanted to copy some people that I read.
Yeah, yeah. When did you start writing? Were you in high school or younger?
Let's see. I started copying like R.E.M. album, R.E.M. style songs, mm-hmm. but alternating them and like Folgers jingles and stuff like that when I was little. And then
Folgers jingles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
And, and then when I was in middle school, I had I was in the tech side of the middle school, and we got to write a play about tech stuff mm-hmm. and, we got to perform the play around, and that was pretty cool. And then, yeah. So, yeah.
So this has been, you've been working with this a long time then. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. So, I tell you what, let's jump right in and get a sense of where you are at the moment. If you would read us one of your current pieces, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to.
Okay.
So, this is something that's, I just put a line out right now, and its new title is Cap Gun. Coup de grace, cross, upset, boss, work, moss, nature, loss, memory, few, precious, rare, two, connected, but not, stew, friends. Mean, rarely, if ever, have I seen an inner state of mind other than sloppy, showed in mean or attire. Meaning, other than the ineluctable modality of personal mess, we simulate everyone else. Coquetry. Coquetry dupes us one and all, over and over, but unlike the Shakers, who likewise couldn't reproduce as a matter of principle, it seems to flourish. Ennui. Leisure can turn hostile, consigning itself with the ennui found in children and art, the detachable commodity of the leisure class. Feeding this repetitious society not only bores but also oppresses. Dungeon. For me, the safest place has got to be the captain's bookshelf. And I've got to admit that I associate paranoia with this dungeon as much as with any other. Intrepid. Behind the questions when I ask myself, love, family, society, politics, culture, economics, I wonder, am I an intrepid young man or no? Am I too comfortable for that? Carbine. The bat, like the carbine, symbolizes a moment for individual achievement, even heroism. Sword. I can nearly grasp country because it involves a sword, a wood, a little creek.
Interesting. Nice. Real compressed. I mean, you've got such an incredible compression working, you know, in this as well as in your more formal pieces. Was that a, you know, a goal? And were you after a very compressed style?
Yeah. I have a very difficult time reading. And so the things that appeal to me the most have the most content in the fewest number of pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my writing style is like that also.
Yeah, there's a real intensity to it. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Well, read us one of your sonnets.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah.
Color is the fruit of light and textbook, but beans have never seen their green gestures. My onion buttons up its shirt coat and coat, and my eyes look out through the keyhole. I trough and crest in wilted cloth and bedclothes in the wilds of a year's citadel. Button-bolted cloth work, warm and contrary, covet and frantically pass plate through socket. Mouse that bucks and buckles under bread-colored chest, exposed by the uppermost two butter-colored buttons unfastened, all the rest, 1 foot at a time, weighed out. Interior guest, cut an aspirin off, sew it on my tongue like a sprig of dill.
Interesting. Yeah, the same compression and a more formal structure, perhaps. Yeah, same intensity there. And I like the play that you evoke there between mind and nature, mind and world. I mean, that it's hard to get away from ourselves out there in nature. I mean, our language, the language that we carry to nature, you know, has us in it too. But yeah, it's beautiful stuff. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. How do you write?
Well, the sonnet that I just read was heavily influenced by Gerard Manley Hopkins, and he has a really cool way of creating a bumpy texture in his writing. He was also a sonneteer in his
sprung rhythms, etc.
Yeah, yes. Sprung rhythms by using lots of bilabials in close connection with one another, so that you have to stop frequently. And then mine is a Shakespearean style sonnet, so there's four quatrains, and then there's a couplet summing things up or coming to a conclusion. His were often Petrarchan Italian sonnets, and he was a Jesuit, so there was a pretty heavy religious influence, and he used his sprung rhythm to show how clumsy people are, and then he dropped it and made everything very smooth to show how musical or essential there might be this other life, you know, behind all this crud that we make up for ourselves.
Yeah, our bumbling world. Right.
So my process on this one was to make as bumpy a texture as I could, and then I really didn't have a topic for a long time. And I just tried to figure out some way to weave these together and surprise myself with meaning, which would still be surprising if it came out.
meaning is often a surprise. what is it? Jack Spicer said, you have to really not want what you don't want to say, you know, for the poem to really.
That's a really good thing. And I think John Cage said something along similar lines. Like he made an effort to hide beauty in his pieces.
Right, right. Indeed, Cage is a master on so many in so many different media. Fabulous, fabulous genius, I think. Yeah. This is a total aside, but a friend of mine came down and did a talk at the Art Museum a couple of weeks ago on Cage's watercolors, which I had no idea that, I had no idea that Cage was also a watercolorist. And they're fabulous. I mean, they're just amazing paintings. He worked sometimes with brushes that were so large you had to get inside them. They were like 6 feet wide, you know. and just did beautiful things with it. And again, using chance procedures to determine the order of elements in the paintings. As you know, Cage often used chance procedures like the I Ching in his music, but he also used that and he carried that right into watercoloring. It was just fabulous. Yeah. Do you ever use chance procedures? Does that appeal to you at all? Does that open it up for you?
Yeah. So with the first piece I read, these are all words that I did not know in Les Miserables. And and every time I don't know a word, I try to write it down, and then I try to write a sentence about that word so that I stand at least a miserable chance of remembering it.
Les Miserables. Yeah, yeah, right.
And then I tried to organize some of those sentences in a way that had meaning. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was wondering about, I mean, we're in a time of war, is what Bravo is all about, and what would compel somebody to go be a soldier, to advocate for war, things like that. It's mm-hmm. a little bit foreign to me. I'm afraid I don't understand a whole lot of yeah. our position.
Right. Well, yeah. As poets, it's sort of hard to comprehend sometimes, I think. I'm Jeff Davis. This is Wordplay, and we're talking today with Sam Adams, Asheville poet. And I guess we'll continue. Let's do. So, Sam, you went to Warren Wilson College. Did you graduate there with a degree in fine arts or MFA, or what did you do the undergraduate program?
I did the undergraduate program,
which is really extraordinary. I think they have a really good undergraduate program as well as the MFA. Yeah. So who did you read while you were there at Warren Wilson?
My favorite experience of reading at Warren Wilson was that poem, the famous poem, Rage, Rage Against the Dying of the Light, while I was supposed to be reading something else. And it was just really enjoyable to have it be somewhat inappropriate to be reading mm-hmm. something else in the class while we were talking about Wordsworth.
Little Dylan Thomas. Yeah. Oh. Raises the energy level a tad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, who were your teachers there? Was Sebastian, speaking of our co-host, Sebastian Matthews, who is not here today, but off celebrating the holiday somewhere. Was he one of your teachers? Who were on the faculty when you were there?
Sebastian was one of my teachers, and I think a whole lot of that guy, I think that he's done a lot for poetry in Asheville as well as elsewhere, but he's also done a lot for me personally. He's just been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think I couldn't say enough.
Very generous spirit.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
And I had a bunch of really cool teachers there. I had my advisor when I for a long time was David Bradshaw, and I thought that he's just very intelligent and really great. And Sam Scoville changed the way I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's what teachers are, you know, in an ideal world, that's what teachers help us do, is change our minds, change the way we think, open up new possibilities for us, for sure. Yeah. So this is 103.5 WPVM. And yeah, let's take a little break. Let's hear some music. Thank you. little Jimmy Smith there, master of the Hammond B3. Thanks, Veronica. And we're back in the studio with, I'm Jeff Davis, this is Wordplay, and we're talking today with Asheville poet Sam Adams. So Sam, it sounds like before you started writing sonnets, you actually went back to the roots of the sonnet form. If you were reading Petrarch, Shakespeare, what led you to the sonnet as a form? It's one of the oldest in English, I guess, that would be a part of it.
Well, there's a lot of really cool 20th century writers, especially in America. And I really wanted to emulate them. But frankly, I don't know when I've written a poem, when I'm doing something experimental. So,
you mean when it's done?
I don't know when it's done. I don't know if it's poetic. I have no idea. It may be prose and just broken up in lines, and I have no clue. Mm-hmm. So I took a hint from Adrienne Rich, who mm-hmm. said that form affirms. She later broke from form and wrote some of the most awesome free verse ever. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. when she was younger, she did write in form. Mm-hmm. So,
right. Are you at all interested in the work of sonneteers like Ted Berrigan? Or you probably have never heard of Jack Clark, but Jack Clark was another, he was a Buffalo poet, a friend of Olson's, who wrote in sonnets very effectively, but, you know, quite differently.
That's awesome. I would be. I'm afraid of my knowledge is very limited, so yeah, that sounds great. I'm going to write their names down right now.
Sure, yeah. Well, Ted Berrigan is a great great place to start with the current, you know, contemporary sonnet, as it were. In fact, of course, he's sadly no longer with us, but his collected poems are out and feature not only the book he published as The Sonnets, but lots of other sonnets as well that didn't make that collection. So, yeah, well, we're checking out. Great, you know, in the Northeast, you know, kind of New York school mode. A really great guy, great poet. So, yeah. And what's the difference between a Shakespearean and a Petrarchan sonnet? The Petrarchan sonnet is what, 4, 4, and 6?
I think it goes 8 and 6.
8 and 6.
It's a different way to mount an argument, is mm-hmm. the way I look at it. The 4, 4, 4, and 2 allows you to develop things in little packages. And the 8 and 6 makes each one a little bit larger, and mm-hmm. I like smaller things.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. That, with the natural bent, you seem to have 4 intensity and compression that would make, you know, perfect sense. Yeah. So when you work now, what do you do? How do you follow your own mind on this? What's your procedure? How do you actually get into the space where you're writing, where you know you're writing? You know?
Well, I write a lot of schlock, and I keep all that in different journals, and uh-huh. then I try to return to those because sometimes there's promising stuff. Sometimes I can recognize the promising stuff while I'm writing it. Mm-hmm. Usually I have no clue. And I also try to, I don't know, it's kind of funny. It's like imagining that that you're going to like something later. But mm-hmm. as I go through the day, I'll like make little mental notes like, oh, here's some bugs crawling around on the cement. I'm going to like that later. Mm-hmm. I got to remember that. Remember, mm-hmm. I never remember it. But
right. So unless you write it down. I mean, writing is an aid to memory, yes, as they say. Yeah. So you write, do you, at the end of the day, chronicle observations or, you know, insights, thoughts, whatever you've had during the day?
No. Yeah. There is nothing harder for me than keeping a daily journal. Mm-hmm. It's pretty sporadic. Mm-hmm. I try, but no. I wish I did. That's the aim.
It's a discipline. It is. I mean, if you want to... other poets through the years have, at various points in their lives and their careers or whatever one calls this endeavor, taken on the discipline of daily writing, and like Creeley's day book is an instance of that, or Dorn, Ed Dorn did a day book as well.
Oh my gosh.
So that's something you might want to look at down the road. Full of trivialities and, you know, just observed instances of whatever human craziness. One way to do it. Well, why don't you read us another poem?
I'd love to. Let's see. I'll read a more recent sonnet. This one's from April.
Okay.
Three layers of forest. Trees, shrubs, and herbs. All anxious for their bodily lives, their material lives, to begin, leaf out. They flower, and the landscape aches pastel. We plan, so our body, all four arms, four legs, and two faces, floats asleep on the sea. The space between us aches with sexual tension. We sit up in bed, pink with doubts. I suppose it's funny that she should give me a black umbrella in mid-April, a toy void to hold over my body, like a wish to get the hell out of here. We gesture and dance and glance. Our dark meat speaks up, different and luckier than half spring.
Nice. A lot of you've got a lot of imagery from the natural world in the human reality, which is really an interesting take on it, I think. How does do you think of yourself as a nature poet, or someone who's interested in nature as such, or as human beings, as nature? I mean,
yeah, I'd like to. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think we've got time for one more poem. Why don't you share another one with us?
Great. All right. As I read, I follow a blade of grass blown across the measure of a sidewalk. Like a boy with shoes too big for his feet, reading makes for intent, awkward stalking. I lay on the couch as I read, as if I was confessing to an analyst the fear that if I don't marry, I'll turn into a zombie. The dreams of going nuts. You interrupt me, and palm down on the page I've just read half of, I swear, you are the hottest one I've stood to lose. You have eyes like twin salmon and hands like twin finches. I say, you have made me lose my grass. What? I feel sort of lame, sort of intimate.
Hmm. Nice. Yeah. 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 A little more open rhetorically than a couple of the earlier ones, but that I like the way that flows.
Thanks.
Neat. Yeah. So we've got actually a couple more minutes. Is that we got 5-4 minutes already? We could actually do one more poem. Do you have one more?
Sure.
Yeah. We're all about poems here.
Addressed white envelopes around my house, leading back and forth like breadcrumbs marking my course through the woods, lay flat on the screen like a white arrow avatar. Bills bob up the stairs. Packages rivet the kitchen table to this address, this mess. Addressed white envelopes painted in place like broken white strips on the highway. Highways of perforated white clouds pass like ropes on a ship that go out and in with use. The antique clouds following antique trade winds. Like a toy car stuck in a fallen tree straining a river. Like an envelope I wave in the air.
Nice. Well, this is Wordplay, and you're listening to WPVM 103.5 FM. Yes, I'm Jeff Davis, your host today. Next week, Sebastian Matthews and Laura Hope Gill will both be back with us, I hope. Today, our engineer has been Veronica Gunter. Thank you both so much, Veronica, for running the boards. And our guest has been Sam Adams.